south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Yep, the things you just gotta love about Latin America. Or not, especially if you're anal. Here's an example. I just got my electric bill. Now, you longtime listeners know I'm off the grid, or I have been for over a year now in the place I've been hanging out recently. This isn't the first time. I've actually gone solar three different times, three different places, but this time completely off the grid. And I've also got that really nice portable solar system with two suitcase panels, 400 watts, with a 1500 watt all-in-one unit that I can just toss in the back seat or trunk of my car, and I could run a computer or small TV and a refrigerator with that thing for 8 or 10 hours. And that's at night. During the day, you just plug it in and it runs and charges the unit's lithium battery at the same time. If you want to know which one I'm using, then you can get it on Amazon now. It costs around, I think, between $1,200 and $1,500 bucks. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link. Now, when talking about actually getting completely off the grid, you've also heard me say many times before, if you've been paying attention, that I never recommend you completely disconnect from the grid. Now, to some people, that doesn't make sense. I just said get off the grid, yet I'm saying don't completely get off the grid. What I'm saying is you get off the grid completely, but you remain connected if you need to get back on. In other words, you keep your meter and all that, and you just have to flip a switch to get back on. Let's say you've got 2 days of rain and clouds, and you've got company over. You've got all the lights and TVs on, and everyone's watching Netflix. Well, all that just might poop out your battery in a day or two. So you just flip the switch and get back on the grid for the remainder, till the sun charges up your system again. And down here in Latin America, it's easy because you don't even have to tell the electric company you went solar. By the way, your electrician will install that switch. You don't have to contact the electric company. Let me repeat that because this is important. If you're going solar down here, completely off the grid, or partially, you don't ever have to contact the electric company, ever. Whereas up in the States, and I've got friends in California, turns out you got to go through three permitting procedures over there. They come out and inspect your house four times too. It's such big brother BS. The U.S. government just can't mind their own business. They got to get their corrupt and disgusting tentacles in everything you do. But that's another story. And also reason 4,856 through 86 why you really have to get the hell out of Dodge as soon as you can possibly do it. Because you know what's next, don't you? As far as the solar energy thing. I'm talking about up in the States, nationwide. They're going to do just like Australia is doing. You know down under, it's a virtual police state, right? They're formulating legislation to tax the number of solar panels you have on your house. And some U.S. Western states are talking about legislation like that, too. What a disgusting bunch of parasites. They won't even let you be your own independent energy producer. They just won't let you have the freedom to do what you want on your own property, even if it improves everyone's situation. But when it doesn't improve the tax base, or actually takes away from the tax base, because if you're not buying electricity from the grid, you're not paying taxes on it, right? The state has to crack the whip. And that's what's next for the U.S., you know, starting with California. It always starts with our comrades in California. But here in Latin America, not in your wildest dreams. Anyway, I'm off the grid. Got two Tesla Powerwalls and about 29 440-watt solar panels, putting out almost 15,000 watts an hour. How about that? In fact, I can't even use all that power. Half of it goes to waste. It just doesn't go anywhere. Of course, I could sell it back to the power company, but I don't want to do that. I know people talk about that all the time up in the States, you know, your meter running backwards and all that, getting a kickback from the electric company. Well, doesn't that feel good? Watching that meter run backwards, who'd have thunk they'd even allow that? Well, not so fast. Guess what? Personally, I don't want anything to do with anyone's electric company. Because if you do have excess power and you sell it back to the grid, you got to sign all kinds of contracts and agreements with the electric company. You have to do that in any country, here in Latin America too. And they're going to come out routinely and inspect your stuff because they got to make sure that it's compatible with the power company's infrastructure. And though you might think that's okay, it's not okay for me because I don't want them to know about anything I'm doing. It's none of their business. I want to maintain a low profile, and you're not going to do that by selling power back to the grid because they're going to make you fill out a giant form. Formulario, a contract, and you'll have to reveal all kinds of stuff about yourself, your bank accounts, credit cards, the whole works. It's government, you know. They're not here to help you. They're in another kind of business, the sheep monitoring and data collection business. But none of that'll happen if you decide to go off the grid or partially off the grid, as long as you don't sign up for selling energy back to the electric company. You get it? So again, let me repeat. When you do solar here in Latin America, you don't need permission from anyone, as long as you own your place, you know. But if you're going to sell power back to the grid, you got to make a deal with the electric company. They're going to come out and do an inspection. And guess what? The government and the electric company have got all your dats. So there goes that low profile. Unless you put it in your cleaning lady's name. I know a gringo who did that. It worked, too. Expat Eddie's going solar now, too, and that's what he's going to do. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. It's a huge advantage to sell power back to the grid when it's not being used by you or you're overproducing, right? Well, guess what? I'm overproducing, and I'm not selling it back to the grid. But my electric bill is zero. So even if I sold the excess back to the grid, no one's going to pay me for that because the way it works, at least here in Latin America, and I believe it does in the States too, it's only an offset against what you take from the grid. If you produce more than you generate, you'll just get a credit against future use of kilowatts from the grid. Clear as mud, huh? Oh, and one more thing. If you make that deal to sell energy back to the grid, the electric company's not going to pay you the kilowatt hour rate you pay when you buy electricity from them. They'll buy it back at wholesale prices without all the taxes and extra fees they add on. You know, all those multiple extra charges on your bill that you really don't know what the hell they are, but you got to pay them anyway. So, for example, up in the States, if you're buying electricity for, let's say, 10 cents a kilowatt hour, that's with all the taxes and excess charges included. If you've got solar panels and you're generating excessive solar and selling it back to them, they're not going to give you 10 cents a kilowatt. They're going to give you about 4 cents a kilowatt, less than half. They'll subtract the taxes and additional charges, and they'll give you the wholesale rate minus all that. That's something a lot of people don't understand. But back to one of the many things I really love about Latin America. Besides the fact that you can do practically anything to your house that you want, and the government's not going to step in and they're not going to ask for permits, well, as long as you're not adding an addition or garage that's larger than the actual original house, then the inspectors might pop over, but it's not a given. It might not happen at all. Oh, but there is another way inspectors might come down on you. If, for example, you have hateful neighbors. Hey, this happened to me. I had a neighbor that was a jerk, just didn't get along with her. She was a frustrated, wealthy Latina middle-aged lady whose husband had left her for a much younger girl. Actually, girls. He had a string of them. And was she sour about it. And she lived alone with her cleaning lady and gardener and yapping lapdog in a very nice house right next door to me. Well, as it turned out, I told her in no uncertain terms one day that I couldn't stand her dog yapping into the wee hours of the morning and she really should do something about it. Well, she was insulted that I'd pick on her little baby. So after that, we weren't on speaking terms. She'd give me the cold shoulder and a dirty look when she'd drive by. And about 6 months later, I was rebuilding a terrace, putting in new sliding glass doors, remodeling the porch and such. And a local municipal government vehicle pulled up. A guy came out, handed me a pink slip that said, I had to go to a hearing because I didn't apply for a permit to remodel my front porch. I couldn't believe it, but I did call my lawyer right after that. That's what you do, you know. My lawyer agreed, of course, it was revenge. A completely ludicrous charge because no one ever pulls a permit for a remodeling job or for practically any construction job that requires an addition to an existing structure. But I knew in a second why that happened. She was connected, so somehow no one in the municipality laughed at her and told her she was ridiculous for filing the complaint. And it turns out I found out later her son was a lawyer. That meant we could go back and forth with this thing and it would cost her nothing. So I sent my lawyer to the zoning meeting, which happened about 3 months later. And I ended up paying a $300 fine, plus my lawyer's charges like $150. So it cost me $450. So I had $450 worth of resentment built up for that lady. Don't worry, I got even. Remember, I'm from Chicago. Can't tell you about it here, but if you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar, starts February 18, 2022, just about 2 months from now. I'll fill you in on the rest of the story. By the way, I've never had any trouble with regular middle-class Latino neighbors, only with a few upscale entitled types who think they're royalty and treat their help like crap. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about my electric bill. Remember I said I pay no electric bill because I'm off the grid? But I never did terminate my electric service from the electric company, so they weren't in the loop. I just went off the grid without telling them, and suddenly there was no electric bill at all. But I'd still get a monthly statement for the meter charge. You know, you're renting the meter. Whether you know it or not, you're renting the meter. That's another little charge on your monthly bill you probably never noticed. But remember, here in Latin America, it's details, details, or lack thereof. So anyway, this month, my meter charge was 50 cents. Yep, I got an electric bill for 50 cents. You ever get one of those? I don't know, maybe in your dreams. And last month, believe it or not, I used no power once again, but I got an electric bill for $1.75. Now, you got to wonder, how could that be? How could they charge me a meter rental fee of 50 cents this month and $1.75 the month before? Well, you know what? I'm not going to go down there and argue. But the point is, getting back to details, you just have to marvel at the disorganization of public-private companies down here. Oh, and the month before it was $2, and the month before that it was 35 cents. You have to marvel at the incompetence or just how they're calculating those things. That is, if anyone's actually calculating those things at all. I just have this image of a fat government slug looking at TikTok with one hand and arbitrarily just picking figures out of the air and plugging them into a spreadsheet with the other hand. Hey, I'm really not complaining. I don't know about you, but I'd rather have a government that's totally lax and has mindless idiots working for it than the crack the whip type that makes you get four different kind of permits before you can put up your own solar panels. Hey, but that's just me. Oh, but there's more. I have a friend who went off the grid about a year and a half ago now. Gringo expat guy who also didn't want to sell power back to the grid. He just went off the grid, didn't tell anybody, and spent a year and a half now, had no electric bill except for the meter rental charge. Oh, and his meter charge is all over the map too, but it's never gone over $2 a month, he said. So he's not complaining. Anyway, he told me just last month, after he'd been off the grid for an entire year and a half, paying nothing to the electric company except that tiny meter charge that was basically pennies. Guess what? Electric company car pulled up. A guy came out, knocked on his door, looked at the solar panels on the guy's roof. They were obvious from the street. He finally said, in Spanish, of course, "I don't want to bother you, sir. You mind if I take some pictures of your solar panels? I just came out because we noticed on your electric bill that you pay nothing. So we usually assume there was some hanky-panky going on and you were stealing power. That happens a lot. It's a big problem. That's usually what we find when power drops way off from month to month. But I see that's not the case. You have solar," he said. "Excellent. I wish I could do that." And this was the power company worker talking. Even he would like to go solar. Even though, if everyone went solar, he'd be out of a job. But just think about it. For a year and a half, this gringo expat guy had no electric bill at all. And he told me he uses at least 600 to 800 kilowatts a month. He told me he was paying about $100 a month to the electric utility before he went off the grid. Now, think about it. That means that it took the electric company billing department a year and a half to figure out this guy might have been stealing electricity. That's why they call it the third world. Details, details. You get it? Now I ask you, how long would it take, do you think, for an inspector from the electric company to come out to your house in Minnesota or wherever you live if your monthly electric bill suddenly went to zero? You think it would take 18 months? How about 6 months? 3 months? 2 months? Yeah, I'm thinking maybe 2 months, since there is the outside chance a person might go on vacation for a whole month and turn off the main breaker, though most people don't even know where that is. But even so, people just don't do that. Up in the States, the more likely scenario is that the inspectors would come over to your house and slap a huge fine on you for going solar without getting all those permits. Yep, Latin America, you gotta love it. I like chaotic, disorganized governments just full of slugs. It's like the difference between getting pulled over by Barney Fife versus an Illinois state trooper. All right, moving on. You know, I get lots and lots of emails from people about Puerto Rico since they've heard it's become a Bitcoin paradise, or at least a lot of Bitcoiners and crypto people are moving there because they've created a lot of tax incentives. Well, you want to know the scoop on that? We're going to go into it today. First, let's start by reading some excerpts from an article that just came out on December 16th. Entitled, "Crypto Rich Flock to Puerto Rico, the World's Newest Luxury Tax Haven Paradise." Starts out by saying, Joe Biden has promised to roll back tax cuts for the rich. He wants to hit them harder. So the impending clampdown has spooked a lot of affluent investors, including crypto investors, who are descending to Puerto Rico in large numbers to dodge tax hikes. Turns out, it says, Puerto Rico passed two important tax bills in 2012 that have transformed the island into a cryptocurrency tax haven paradise. Under Act 22 of its local tax code, the Caribbean island and unincorporated U.S. territory, you know, it's a U.S. protectorate, offers full exemption from all local taxes on passive income to new residents. Act 20 provides a 4% corporate rate and exemptions on dividends. This is a much better deal than in the U.S., where investors pay 20% in long-term capital gains and 37% in short-term gains. All of this has caused an explosion in remote work on the island. it's become a tax haven for crypto corporations and crypto investors. An example is the case of Anthony Ettman, who left Los Angeles behind and bought a condo at a Puerto Rican resort in March. Ettman is the chief executive officer of iKaigi Asset Management, a crypto asset management firm. He relocated to Puerto Rico's wealthy North Shore. He says he expects to reap huge tax savings. However, the rise in crypto markets lately has made it an easy target for the Biden administration and Democrats to tax the living hell out of the industry. So crypto investors are getting out of the U.S. Smart money now understands what's coming and wants no part of it. Other good examples of the crypto exodus from the U.S. include Pantera Capital and Redwood City Ventures. They've moved there to escape U.S. taxes, too, along with Facebook product manager turned whistleblower Frances Hagen, who recently disclosed that she moved to Puerto Rico to be with her crypto buddies, too. Says Mr. Giovanni Mendez, a corporate tax attorney now specializing in crypto taxation issues, he says crypto people are moving to Puerto Rico because they've heard other crypto people are moving there. All are independent, creative, like-minded people. Sort of a crypto domino effect. So how'd these special tax laws get set up in Puerto Rico? Well, you see, Puerto Rico's tax laws weren't specifically set up to help crypto people. It's just that in 2012, they were slated to go bankrupt. Puerto Rico was going down the tubes, and they had to change their tax laws to help its struggling economy. And for crypto investors, it was a huge gift. In fact, so far this year, Puerto Rico has received more than 1,200 new crypto business applications through its Individual Investors Act, which exempts new residents from paying on capital gains. And another 274 corporations, LLCs, partnerships, and other entities were approved for the Exports Services Act, which provides a 4% corporate tax rate and a 100% exemption on dividends. Anyway, there's this gringo guy named Michael Turpin, the founder of BitAngels. He moved to Puerto Rico from Vegas in 2016. He's known as the Messiah for convincing crypto people to move to Puerto Rico. Turns out, me Johnny here again, here's the point. Crypto investors are only going to very specific areas in Puerto Rico. Like, for example, Bahia, which is 26 miles east of San Juan, and the Ritz-Carlton Dorado Beach Resort. Of course, you may have figured the wave of newcomers has lifted property markets in the whole country. It has, and not for the better. Francisco Diaz Fournier, partner of Luxury Collection Real Estate, says some individual properties and houses are selling for over 20 million bucks. In fact, real estate developers are saying in the province of Bahia, prices per square foot doubled just in the last year. Meanwhile, inventory is running out for high-end homes. So if you're thinking of moving there, at least in the areas that are nice, you better be a millionaire. But here's the bad news, actually the first of the bad news. Now, me, Johnny, again, I've been telling you all along for the last 11 years on this show, I only like Puerto Rico to visit on vacation. I'd never want to live there, no matter how good the tax break. For one thing, its government is handcuffed to the U.S. It's a U.S. protectorate. Look, especially with all those mega-rich crypto guys coming down, that's a real honeypot for crooked politicians. Are there any other kind? Problem is, you know, it is a U.S. protectorate, and they have a right to vote to become a state. Every couple of years, they do have that vote, and the vote keeps getting closer and closer. So close that people are beginning to wonder if it will be the 51st state eventually. And when that happens, all those special tax rules dissolve away, and Puerto Rico becomes part of the U.S. federal tax system. Now, after listening to that article, you probably think you have a pretty good sense of what's going on in Puerto Rico, politically and tax-wise, right? Oh, and real estate-wise, too. Well, that's how the regular news services can fool you. Well, you knew that already, right? Because right now I want to read an email to you from someone who is right on the ground there. It's as if this guy with boots on the ground there is living in a completely different, bizarro world. Listen to this. Starts out, Johnny, if you use this, please don't say my name. Starts out, some friends of mine convinced me to move to Puerto Rico 6 months ago. Puerto Rico is a giant slum, if you ask me. About 10% of the homes for sale are currently in foreclosure. Then there are those few little tiny pockets of very nice homes. That's where the boom is. Problem is, the overwhelming poverty just takes over. The grocery stores sell only low-end items that you'll find in any slum area. Fresh fruits and vegetables are hard to find, and everything's shipped in by boat. So most of what I can find, I have to buy on or after the expiration date. And I've already had two bouts of food poisoning. And they talk about Bahai Beach. That's where the crypto guys are relocating to. Some of my friends are at Bahai Beach. $7 million for a townhouse on the beach, and it's in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by miles and miles of slums. Literally just tin shacks everywhere. I can't stand it there myself. And look out, if they make Puerto Rico a state, and that tax haven status for millionaires goes away, I'm betting that $7 million townhouse won't be worth $500,000. Sure, it's true, he says, you avoid taxes, but the things you need to buy are much more pricey. This is an island, you know. Everything except a few food items has to be shipped in. And how about this, he says, I'm being charged $150 a month for my checking account. Those are my bank charges. And gas is twice the price as the mainland. Most stores you're used to, like Target or Staples, aren't here and won't ship here. Amazon Prime takes about 3 weeks and FedEx takes over a week. He says, I figure I receive only about half of the snail mail that's sent to me. Then you've got those mosquitoes, hurricanes, and earthquakes. They're quite common. They still haven't rebuilt from the big hurricane of 2 or 3 years ago. And how about this? No homes in Puerto Rico have carpeting because the windows blow out and water pours in from the tropical storms, so carpeting's a huge liability. And the power and internet go out every day. Even the water just goes out for days at a time. And without AC in about 2 hours, your home's uninhabitable. And think about your refrigerator and freezer. And then our writer describes what's pretty common in most every Latin country, not just Puerto Rico. He says, nothing happens when you want it. A friend of mine had her power cables running into her home disintegrate in the salt and air. And the power company said they'd be there to reconnect everything in 8 weeks. And as for the locals, they just look at me as a gringo to be taken advantage of whenever they can. So, all this stuff about Puerto Rico being such a great place to be and such a great tax haven. Well, it hasn't been as great as I thought. All right, thanks for that, Mr. Anonymous. All right, now for my 2 centavos. You longtime listeners have heard me say over and over again that Puerto Rico is a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. You just heard a lot of the reasons why. And if I was going to move someplace just for the tax breaks, I'd definitely set down in El Salvador. They've removed capital gains, property tax, personal tax, everything, as long as you're doing business in crypto. And I love the fact that their government's not on very good terms with the U.S. government, because neither am I. But I do want to say this. You know, there's always a certain percentage of gringos and expats who come down who are natural pessimists, you know, downers, complainers, time vampires, energy suckers, you know all the names for them. The thing is, they're the ones that are most likely to get on the internet and start responding to articles, op-ed pieces, blogs, Twitter, you know. Negative, pessimistic people are real active on anti-social media. Because, you know, happy and content people, they're happy and content. They don't need to make it their mission to write letters of complaint. And this guy who wrote this email seems he doesn't like much of anything. Though it is true. He's totally right in his observations. It's just that if everything drives you nuts and you see fault in everything, you're just not going to be happy in Latin America or probably anywhere else. Now, as for me, I've been called anal before. I'm a picky guy. Most engineers are like that. Maybe not in their closets or garages, but we're taught to write everything down and stay organized. So I, too, can be an equal opportunity critic. You've heard me rip on people and their houses, cars, and the way they live before. But still, I'm a generally happy guy. And though there are lots of things about Latin America that are pretty disgusting, like the pollution, the littering, reggaeton, the ass crack pants phenomena, a good percentage of the bathrooms, things like that. But realistically, when compared to what's happening in the USA and how it's completely changed over the last 10, 20 years, in the USA, Canada, Europe, Australia, it's a triple whammy. Society, culture, and the economy are going down the toilet fast. Being practically anywhere in Latin America except for Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. Except for those three countries, the good far, far outweighs the bad. And the thing is, if there's something you don't like about Latin America or your living conditions in Latin America, you could change them with ease. You could live like a backpacker, live with the locals, live as a middle-class Latino, or live in a gated, guarded community. It's your choice. As for me, I like to live in a house or apartment that has first-world amenities. And I want that apartment or house to be in really good, tip-top shape. And I want to have a nice yard, a nice garden, and a nice, spectacular view. And if those things aren't happening, I won't complain and write letters to the local gringo English tourist rag. And I won't whine on social media to the local gringo fakebook expat groups either. I'll just hire someone to fix what needs fixing, or I'll tinker away at it myself. I'll do the improvements. I'll move to a place that has a great view. The trade-off is things are so much cheaper down here. The lands, the rents, the apartments, the houses, and the people so nice that instead of complaining about where you live or your surroundings, just add value to your own place yourself. And that, by the way, is why Latinos love to have gringos move into the neighborhood. They know we're going to have the nicest house on the block, or at least the best maintained. And you gringos and expats out there living in Latin America, If you're complaining about your water not being on 24/7, get a cistern or move to a subdivision that's got its own well. Municipal or city water is always a problem in Latin America. It's never on 24/7. Well, maybe once in a while, but all you need to do there is buy yourself a nice big cistern. And then at night, when no one's using water, water pressure builds up in the lines, fills your giant cistern. I mean giant. Don't get a little one. Get one that's at least 250 gallons. And then the next day, when the water kicks out, the motor and sensor on your cistern will automatically recognize that pressure drop and kick in seamlessly. And at night again, it'll fill up to the top. And a 250-gallon cistern setup with a pump and everything would cost maybe $500. Now, you long-term listeners have heard me say that the average American uses about 100 gallons of water a day. And you'll find the average Latin American uses around 25 gallons of water per day. Of course, wealthy Latins use pretty much the same amount of water as regular Americans because they can. And many of them live in upscale neighborhoods with their own wells, or if they're on municipal water, they have huge cisterns. But it's true about 90% of Latin Americans use about 25 gallons of water a day. So let's say you have a 500-gallon cistern. That's a medium-sized one. That'll last a water-wasting American 5 days, or a family of two, 2.5 days, family of four, about a day. Of course, you're thinking, what if it's a prolonged water shortage, like the guy was talking about in Puerto Rico, 2 days, 3 days? Well, I'll tell you this. I've been down in Latin America over 30 years now, and I've never lived or been in an area where the water's been out more than 1 day. And only then, under special circumstances, it just doesn't happen like that. In normal Latin municipalities, the water might go out 2, 3, or 4 hours a day, but never for the whole day. At least in my 30 years down here, I haven't seen that unless there's some big calamity, a big natural disaster like a hurricane or an earthquake or big repair. Exactly what happened in Puerto Rico, what is it now, 2.5 years ago? And still, if you took a drone and flew over, you'd see that a good part of the island still looks like it just got hit by the hurricane. So again, for me, Puerto Rico's out. On top of that, they're a U.S. protectorate, so they're right under the thumb of a very Orwellian political machine, one that's completely bankrupt economically and culturally. And finally, an email from Kevin. He says, Johnny, how can I get a job like yours, doing podcast radio about Latin America or any other foreign culture? I know I could start a podcast, but there are literally tens of thousands of podcasters out there. How do you get noticed? When dogs, cats, even lizards have podcasts. Wait a minute. Kevin, me, Johnny here, you're wrong. AOC, Hillary, and Maxine Waters do not have podcasts. So anyway, Kevin, you're wondering how to do a successful podcast? As for me, I just work for a big station because of white privilege and the entitled white guy quota. South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.